This is Twit.
I'm not just an enterprise guy. I'm also a maker. I'm a DIYer. And there's always been this question of, well, do I have the right to fix my own gear? Do I have the right to actually use the things that I've bought? In fact, do I actually buy something when I give a company my money? Well, that's exactly what we're going to be talking about with the right to repair. You've seen the stickers and you've heard the stories. X company puts a label on their newfangled whatchamacallit, and it says that it will void your warranty if you open the case. Or Y company says that installing third-party software will mean that they no longer have to service the gear that they've sold you. Well, we've seen it for years, and we've heard the arguments go back and forth on why and why not that should happen. But here's the problem with all that. Evidently, that's illegal. That's the conclusion arrived at by the Federal Trade Commission this last Tuesday. They sent warning letters to six companies, which are likely, though not confirmed, to Nintendo, Sony, Hyundai, Apple, Microsoft, and Samsung. Now, the letters point out warranty terms that violate a 1975 law that governs manufacturers' warranties, specifically provisions that tie warranty coverage to a particular use of a particular product or service, and those that hurt consumers and businesses that offer competing products and services. That's what the 1975 law is supposed to do. Now, let's go ahead and do a little bit of quiet application here. Combine that with the story from last month about California's right to repair bill. They're the 18th state to introduce some sort of right to repair legislation. Now, the bill, introduced by Assemblywoman Susan Eggman, specifically called out Apple products and would require retailers and companies like Apple to allow their devices to be worked on at non-Apple stores or approved retailers. Now, coming back to this is all about this culture of ownership. What do you actually own? What are you actually paying for? What rights do you have when you pay your hard-earned money to get a phone or a laptop or an entertainment console or a networking switch, a router, a back-of-cabinet power supply? This is actually a big topic for the enterprise. This is not just for retail. This is for anyone who's ever put money into a project. So I want to open this up to the panel here. Let's start with you, Curtis. This has long been a sore spot for consumers because they get all the high-profile cases. They get whether or not you actually invalidate your Xbox warranty by opening it up, or they get the satisfaction of knowing that jailbreaking their iPhone is not actually illegal. But the enterprise has been dealing with this for far longer because of such strict licensing terms on hardware, where a manufacturer will basically say, yeah, you could use this for 7 years if it's on contract, but after that seventh year, basically we're going to brick it. Why is this such an issue, and how has it been allowed to get this far? Why are we at the point where you have to have a federal agency step in and say, no, that's yours. You do with what you do with it what you want.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you bring up the enterprise, because one of the first places that this really became a huge issue involved farmers, and the issues of the software that controls the engines and other features in John Deere tractors. And John Deere actually used provisions of the DMCA to say that that code, that software, was copyrighted. It was theirs. And that if the farmers went in and tried to change it, tried to modify it in any way, that they were violating copyright and were subject to federal law. I think what we're having now is this whole discussion about what are you doing? Are we simply licensing everything from the manufacturer, whether it's something that is obviously a piece of software, or something that, like most things we get today, just has some software in it? And I think the reason that we have to have the federal agency get involved is because we have set up this competing set of interests between the manufacturers, the software publishers, and the consumers. And what we've seen over the years is, depending on who the administration is, how the agencies are being run, a pendulum that swings back and forth between favoring the rights of the corporations or favoring the rights of the consumers. Because we're starting to get some clarification about this, and yet because there are still things like DMCA to be involved, I think this is setting up what is an inevitable string of court cases that work their way through. So I'm very excited to see this. I think it's a step in the right direction, but I think it's a step on a journey that's going to take us a number of years and many, many pieces of legal process before it's resolved.
Yeah, and I'm glad that you brought that up, because I actually set this up in sort of a devil's advocate view, because I know it's very easy to rail on corporations. It's very easy to look at them and say, well, yeah, I paid for it. I can do anything I want with it. However, I think all of us, if we're being reasonable, understand that there's a limit to what you can do. For example, Eric Duckman in the chat room brings up the fact that you're not supposed to replace any of the chips inside of your engine control unit or in the CAN, the controller area network that runs your car, especially a modern car where everything can be controlled by the computer. Well, I understand that, because if you do modify something and it causes a crash, that's your fault. You did that. That wasn't the manufacturer giving you bad hardware. That was a change that you made. However, that's different than remember when Apple came out, when the jailbreaks were first starting to come out on the original iPhone. Their argument was that if you jailbreak your phone, you might take down the cellular network. And that flew for a very, very long time. So I get, yeah, that's that pendulum. It's like, yes, okay, I should be prevented from doing things that are going to harm people around me. But at the same time, if corporations are going to use these regulations to overreach and set themselves up for crazy profit margins, that's not okay either. Lou, let me bring you in here, because you do represent a company that has been accused in the past of using some of these draconian measures, specifically with the Xbox and with the Surface. This tension that we have to fight between making sure that customers won't do anything that will affect other people and allowing customers to do what they want with the gear that they paid for, that's got to be a constant thing over at Microsoft, right?
Yeah, I think any device company would kind of runs into this kind of pendulum effect. I'm not sure what they're thinking with Microsoft perspective, but I do know that, with car companies especially, they constantly offer, some companies offer the aftermarket capabilities, some companies do not, some companies embrace that, some companies do not. They kind of close the door. They use on parts that are not necessarily readily available around, like, for instance, if you buy a Nintendo Switch, if you want to replace the controller, tends to break fairly often. If you want to basically get that fixed, you can't, because the parts that are actually available for that particular device are not readily available on the internet anywhere. You have to actually buy a new controller. In fact, I have friends that live in North Dakota. Lots of farming going on there, and in fact, they have these really high tech farming equipment that they do modify over time. In fact, they do put new firmware on them. There's some legislation where North Dakota is trying to block this. A couple friends over there were telling me that this is something that's big, because by modifying the firmware, they allow the devices to do different things that they need them to do, and the manufacturer doesn't actually allow that. And so there's, again, it can kind of go across to any market. I think that sometimes the positives tends to sometimes outweigh the negatives here. Some companies embrace it, and they make lots of money over selling parts. I mean, they can sell parts for any prices that they want. And especially since they're coming from the manufacturer, they're considered first party. So I think it's kind of, again, like you said, it's a pendulum effect.
Yeah. You remember that the original 1975 law specifically dealt with cars. At the time, it was standard practice for manufacturers to say you could only get your car serviced at an authorized service station. And they had all sorts of tricks, from holding back diagnostic manuals to making sure that those small repair shops couldn't actually get the tools to service engines and transmissions. And then they made you go to the more expensive place. Well, at that time, we got together as a society and as a group of lawmakers, and we said, no, that's not right. If they've got the knowledge to fix a vehicle, they should be allowed to fix the vehicle. If you paid for a car, then that company that sold it to you shouldn't be able to tell you, we will only let it run if you continue to pay us money. And we've seen analogs of that all the way down the line. I mean, let's look at inkjet printers. Inkjet printers is one of the more recent phenomenons. And then we could all go into networking switches and how those licensing arrangements from HP and Cisco are set up. However, and Lou, I want to throw this back over to you, because we've been talking a little bit about this pendulum a lot. Where is the right spot for that pendulum to land? I do want to make sure people can do what they want with the gear that they've purchased, but at the same time, especially in a more connected world, one bad device can lead to really bad ramifications. We've seen it in the blips when we were talking about routers. Really poorly maintained routers can harm the network in general. So at what point do you say the common good outweighs your need to be able to do what you want? Simple question.
It's almost like a religious war here. I think about it from the open source software perspective. You know, this is a constant thing that they're constantly fighting is, you know, hey, like if the source is open, people can modify it. It tends to be more secure. It's easier to use. It's easier to expand and create new functionality and get it to do what I need it to do. But it also means that you sometimes take risks for low quality, low performance software because people don't pay attention to that when they're building these things. So again, the pendulum goes back and forth there as well. But what you're finding with open source is things tend to work out. I mean, you get more secure devices, you get more secure firmware, you get more performant applications and browser engines and that kind of thing because you're crowdsourcing that. And so that goes, let's apply that to hardware and repairing and modifying. I think that can apply there as well. You know, as long as we got to put out guides to say, hey, this is what the device is currently made of. And these are the parts you can replace it with. But if you don't do that, you just kind of say, oh, you can repair it and then don't provide anything, then you kind of risk the fact that people are going to muck things up and create issues. So again, it all depends on how this is implemented. If they just say, hey, right to repair, but then don't supply anything, you're still going to create this kind of an ecosystem of negativity. And I think that you're better off just kind of going with the flow and supplying the details that needed to be there.